Hey everyone, it's Daryl Kristen with AfterBuzz TV. Is your computer running slow? Well, mycleanpc.com can clean it up and speed it up today. Now you might be asking yourself, how did my computer get this way? It's so frustrating sometimes, right? Well, opening infected email attachments, downloading music and games can slow down your computer. Over time, running these programs can cause junk files, internet clutter, processor and hard drive errors to build up on your computer. MyCleanPC can help. First, go to MyCleanPC.com and in minutes, you can get a free computer diagnosis and find out what's slowing down your computer. Then simply activate MyCleanPC software to clean out the junk, internet clutter, and even remove viruses, and MyCleanPC is guaranteed to increase the speed of your computer. With MyCleanPC, there are two easy steps to speed up your computer. First, go to MyCleanPC.com and get a free computer diagnosis. Then simply activate MyCleanPC software to optimize your computer performance. Go to MyCleanPC.com today and find out what's slowing down your computer. That's MyCleanPC.com.
You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. Now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
From the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's Game of Thrones After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Game of Thrones After Show.
Happy Father's Day.
Hey!
And you thought only episode 9s could be epic in Game of Thrones.
No.
You thought wrong. I don't know who I'm talking to, just general people. But joining me tonight, not general people, Kyle Maddox.
Hey guys, happy to be here on this Father's Day.
It's
beautiful. It's beautiful.
And the lovely Kristen Snyder.
Thanks, Dave. Hi guys. Whoa.
Just whoa. And watching twice in one night, Sarah Stratton.
I mean, I just had to celebrate. How to celebrate the Game of Thrones Day versus, I mean, good Father's Day too, I guess.
Game of Thrones. And guys, I'm Dave Klein. So let's go ahead and jump right into the episode, because this was a happening episode. It was an hour and 15 minutes long. So extra long, extra dose of Game of Thrones, because there's so much happening.
I feel like we should do that always.
Yeah, I'd be fine with that. I'd be okay
A hard path to go down, though. It's like once you do an hour and 15, then it becomes an hour and 20. And then all of a sudden...
That is essentially like I'm watching a movie every week.
What's the problem?
What's the problem?
This show is a movie on television.
It really is.
I just hate how we have to wait a year, literally, pretty much, for 10 episodes.
Yeah.
Not quite. Almost.
But at least they're really good episodes.
That's
worth
true.
It.
Like 10 individual movies.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing how long it really adds up to when you really think about it. But let's go ahead and start with basically where we left off last week. And by basically, I mean exactly where we left off. At the wall, with Jon leaving to treat with Mance Rayder. And the Wildlings immediately surround him. And we got the shaky camera style action as they do this moment.
Mm.
Yeah, and he just walks straight up to Mance's tent within a grand total of 30 seconds.
Yeah, it was pretty quick.
That was difficult. I really believed it. Great.
They weren't that far away. Come on.
I mean, they should have at least, like,
given him some...
Gave him the pat
obstacle.
Down.
Obstacle.
Gave him an obstacle?
Yeah, he just literally walked up and was like, I'm here, let's talk.
And they put a knife inches from his hand.
Well, that's why he went out without any weapons or with ghosts or any other men, so he would be non-threatening, so they would let him walk up.
Yeah, because it's like treating. You're treating with someone.
Yeah.
That jacket's pretty threatening, though.
The black cloak.
Yeah, there's like could be two other men under there.
Yeah,
they just pop out. Surprise! Three men against an army.
Perfect.
You got nothing. Nothing. So yeah, he goes to treat with Mance, and he immediately tells Mance the truth for the first time about Corrin Halfhand and how he was following Corrin's orders. And actually, as Mance keeps on quipping, he's like, "Okay, Mance has been honest the whole time, and Jon keeps on lying constantly."
Yep.
But Mance realizes a lot. But before that, they kind of had this moment of honoring each other's dead because they have Ygritte in common, and then they both lost great warriors. Gren.
The Mighty Mag.
The Mighty Mag. The last of the giant king.
He was the king of the giants, apparently.
But also I felt like the questions that he gave him about Ygritte were very, like, insightful. And although John's lied to him a lot, I felt that the questions he was asking him about, like, his vows, about everything else, they were very specific. It wasn't just small talk.
Mm.
It was, like, trying to see his character, see what he, if he loved her, see what he respected, and just, like, when he asked if he had killed her, things like that.
Yeah.
And he said no. I felt like all of those were very wise, and to me it was like he is the brains of this operation, and for good reason.
Yeah,
well, I feel like everything he was asking just proved that he was loyal at the end of the day to his vows, to his woman, or to whoever he pledged allegiance to. It's like he was putting it out there that you could trust his word.
Yeah.
It was nice to see John. It was nice to see John finally just sort of drop the veil with the wildlings and be like, all right, look, respect here. Let's just talk openly. Let's do this.
All right, respect.
But, well, he did. He didn't bullshit.
Yeah.
And it was nice to see. He just sort of looked at Mance and he was like, you know what? I was honest, but I just wasn't honest to you.
Yeah.
And there was no sugarcoating it. It was very nice. It was very upfront. And I like that. John's growing up a lot.
Yeah, he was upfront about everything other than the fact that he had come to murder him.
And also claiming they had a lot more men, arrows with masses. Like, no, actually, I know exactly how much you have, and I have 500 men climbing the wall somewhere else.
Yeah, that was a nice little surprise by Mance. He was like, you know what? We threw everything we had, or we put what we had at you, and you threw everything you had at us. And he's like, now I know your defenses, and I've already sent 400 men to go climb the wall. They're going to be attacking the south side tomorrow.
So good luck.
It was also, among a lot of surprises for book readers in this episode, this was another good surprise to me, because I don't think he had that tactic planned out. They kind of just attacked the wall a lot longer to a lot more failure.
Yeah, I don't recall exactly if he did or not, but
yeah, I just nice remember it lasted longer of them just keeping on that siege attack at the wall specifically. So
do you guys
last a lot longer than one day?
Do you guys think that Mance would actually keep his word if John went back and they lifted the gates and let the wildlings go through? Do you think he would have not killed any more of his men?
Well, like, that was the interesting part for me, is that when he did make that arrangement of peace, it was very kind of specifically seemed to be targeted for Castle Black. No one would die. But the whole point of Castle Black standing up is to save the rest of the people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I felt that undertone, like, propelled, although John was obviously thinking, it still made his task important. Because there was still, it wasn't about the people at Castle Black. It was about everyone else.
Although Mance made his cause sound really noble with the whole fact that, hey, we're all just trying to get the hell away from those White Walker things you might have seen.
We're trying to hide.
We're just trying to get away and be safe. And that's the way that he made it sound in this entreaty.
Indeed. And it seemed a bit ridiculous to me, because if there's anything we learned from Daenerys in another storyline, is when you have a lot of soldiers and troops or whatnot, or dragons in her case, you can't always control them. I mean, he's got 100,000 men, and for him to say, no one else will die, it's a little ridiculous.
Right.
Yeah.
Jason Osborne on the chat saying, I'm thinking that Mance might have set the love affair up. He seems to ask that question about vows pointedly. I don't think you can really set up love. I like to think you can't.
Well, we have, Mance has been established as being a Night's Watch Ranger in the show, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. So I think he knows. He knows what John's going on. He knows the vows and everything.
Yeah, and like he saw them together and how they were.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then probably that's really a lot of what's going to change a man at Night's Watch is that really important piece you can't have that John had with the grit. And I'm sure Mance saw that.
Although, according to Sam, what is the rules? Like, it's marriage is what they're not
allowed. No marriage, no children. You can't father children.
Okay.
John broke no vows.
You can have
he did not do either of these things.
Exactly. You can have a fun night in a cave with a redhead. I mean,
as long as she dies before she has a child.
Oh, my God.
Then you should not say things like that.
Whoa! Well, yeah. Okay.
Hey, it happened in the show. I'm just pointing out things that happened.
Are you saying Ygritte was pregnant?
Who knows? We don't know.
Oh, theories.
No, I'm going to go with
spoilers,
no. She was not.
She was, yeah.
No.
Her baby actually becomes a White Walker.
I was scared she was going to become a White Walker.
Yeah.
Like, has he, like, turned away and, like, refused to look back? I just thought that we're going to see, like, this.
I mean, he kind of dropped the fire far away the last part of the torch, so who knows? He might run into her later.
That would be funny. Flashback, White Walker.
White Walker, red hair.
But before this moment happens, we have Mance Rayder realizing what John's really there for, which was just to straight up murder him.
Yeah.
And as he realizes that, the horns start blowing, and there's an attack coming from somebody, and couldn't be John and the Wall, because they don't have troops, and what's going on? And turns out it's... This is where Stannis Baratheon has been the whole time. He's been traveling north.
Dun, dun, dun. It took him a whole season. I think it was the season 3 finale when Davos went to him with the letter from Castle Black saying about the wildlings and the whites and everything. And so we've had an entire season of them getting to the wall. Thankfully, they're finally here.
These guys obviously probably... Did you know it was Stannis right away?
No, I didn't. Did you know?
I was like, it has to be Stannis. But, like, they were being so unclear. Like, I couldn't make out the banners.
Yeah, they were being really unclear with the banners.
There was, like, fog. And I was literally, like, moving at the screen. I was like, fog, move. I can't see anything. Because I thought it was Stannis. But they still keep you on your toes so much that I didn't know for sure. Like, I didn't know who else it could be. But I wasn't ever positive until, of course... They all, like, get off the horse at the exact same time.
Yeah. That's a pretty noble moment there as Davos and Stannis are both swooping off their horse all at once. Whoop. Like, we won this and obliterated you guys.
I'm glad Stannis is finally there because his storyline never really interested me as much as the other ones. So I'm glad that now it seems like he's going to get into the action next season because I didn't think it was him. I was thinking it was some other wildling troop that decided they were going to go off on their own. I don't know. But I was just not even thinking it was Stannis because I just find that whole storyline uninteresting.
Maybe you just think Stannis is kind of boring.
Yeah.
Just, like, him.
Well,
like,
him as a character is kind of boring. Yeah. The way
he is
they
not
write
the life
him.
Of the party. No. Exactly. I think we can all agree about that.
Yeah, it's like they need to develop his character a little bit more if you want me to care about him.
Well, I don't know if it's more... I don't know if it's necessarily need to develop his character more, but he's just not... He's not that engaging. He's not a charismatic individual. And I think that's his problem.
And that's also the
nobody
point
wants him as king.
Kind of him.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
So I think that you do have to kind of keep that up. Because if he was charismatic, if you did learn to, like, love him, then you would really want him to.
But I don't love him or hate him.
But I think that's actually the perfect thing for his character, because that's what's supposed to be, too. Because
he is the rightful king.
He literally is the rightful king. It's just nobody cares. They're just like, we'll leave him. We don't want to necessarily, they're not trying to kill him. They're just like, just leave him, whatever. Yeah, like, nobody cares about him.
Nobody wants him as their king.
Yeah, in the story and then in Kristen's life.
And in real life.
You guys
are the public. You are the public opinion.
That's very true.
I agree.
Did you guys think this battle was a little ridiculous? Where were the giants?
Most of the giants are dead.
Two of them died.
I don't know. They said something about the king. What was his name again?
Mag the Mighty.
Mag the Mighty being the last of the bloodline.
Or the biggest.
So did they all scatter after the king died? I felt like there should have been... Like, you had the Stannis' cavalry showing up. All right, they can tear through a lot of wildlings. But they're going to run into a giant riding a mammoth.
Yeah, I mean...
And where?
The only other giant I saw was when, like, Jon Snow was, like, walking out and there was, like, three... crows like pecking on one.
Oh, the one they shot with a giant crossbow last season.
Yeah, and I was
season.
Like, three crows. Do I need to remember this? Or
I think Mance had already told everyone to stand down at that point, and he was finding a way through the wall without, you know, fighting anymore. So I felt like he kind of called back the giants or, like, you know,
you guys
he
take
wasn't
a break.
Ready for war. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go off somewhere. Okay.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's no way he would have expected an attack. Yeah. He was just expecting defense.
Hmm.
So, things don't work out too well for Mance. He's asked to bow down, but wildlings don't bow down.
No.
We don't kneel.
Yeah, they don't kneel. And John actually sticks up for Mance in this moment when he talks. He straight up confronts Stannis, tells Stannis who he is. And Stannis immediately respects him because of Ned Stark and the bloodline. He very clearly has a certain respect for bloodline and heirs and all that, as that's what he's fighting for.
Yep.
And even more than that, also... The fact that he knows he is the one true king because of Ned. Mm-hmm. There's that allegiance. The allegiance that he was the only one noble enough at King's Landing to tell him. Like, about
Jaime.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So there's also kind of, in a way, that allegiance and that debt. That they had a relationship that was beyond just Ned's reputation to be a stand-up guy. Like, they did have communication that led to him going on this giant mission.
So Andrew SF on the chat saying Stannis has pretty much been a taking care of business fellow, not really charismatic. No. Yeah, that's just really, that's all he is, just down to business. Let's just get things done. But yeah, so then John stands up for Manus in this moment, or Mance in this moment.
It was kind of nice because Stannis asked him, he was like, what would your father do? And you can see that moment, and I think we all had that moment where it was like, well, he'd cut his head off. But John was like, I don't want that to happen because this guy didn't kill me either time that I've approached him. And so it was nice to see him just kind of come up with a plan right on the spot. And it was a pretty honest remark in a way.
Yeah, and I'm glad that he spared Mance Rayder's life because I feel like we're not done with his character. We didn't get to see a whole lot of him, and he really intrigues me. There's a reason he left the Wall. There's a reason he's leading the Wildlings, and I want to know all these reasons. Like John said, you should take him captive and let him talk or hear what he has to say.
Yeah, absolutely. So after this, this ended up saving Jon Snow's life, essentially, when you think about it. So Jon is back, and there, as Maester Aemon is proceeding over all the dead brothers, and now, as they have discovered, you need to burn the bodies so they don't become white.
In the most boring funeral speech ever. Please add that in.
That's what they do.
Oh, my God.
Well, was it as boring as Maester Pycelle before the fight with the viper in the mountain?
It seemed similar.
They would be great friends. That's what Maesters do. They were probably childhood friends. I couldn't see it.
Oh, no. Did you guys see Alistair Thorne on that funeral pyre?
Was that Alistair Thorne? I was trying to figure out who that was that they lingered on.
Well, they put it on Gren for a while. I didn't see Alistair Thorne. Did anybody?
I wasn't looking. I was concentrated more on Gren.
Because we saw him take the wound from Tormund last week, but then he got dragged off into a back room.
Yeah, we just haven't seen him at all.
And we haven't seen him. I'm curious about him.
I feel like we would have seen
if he died.
Yeah, definitely
would have gotten the spotlight on that one.
Yeah. We see Janice Slint standing around just watching, and we see Miss Sandy. Or not Miss Sandy.
Miss
Sandy's just there.
We see Shireen and Selyse.
Melisandre.
And Melisandre.
In the fire. Sorry,
in the fire, looking at John.
Yeah, looking at John, just staring at him.
I was like, are we seeing her face in the fire? Is she at an angle behind the fire? What's happening?
It just seemed like they were on opposite sets of the strike. And I think there's so much more to that because she has this, you know, draw to people with like king's blood and or who she, what she sees in the fire about the destiny, about fate, about what's going to happen. And I think John, like how she said, with Davos has a really big part in this. I think she's seeing that John will too. And I'm like so curious because personally, I have a theory that this is dealing with John's blood because we obviously have had this whole debate about his mother and about Ned. And I'm like, well, there's some noble, maybe some royal in there or something. So I was like, he could have king's blood too.
Well,
who knows?
Ned's blood is noble blood at the very least.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but Melisandre just staring at him and, you know, John likes those redheads, so.
Yeah.
Stay away, John.
And they also, we also got the other... who was it that said it? Was it Tormund Giantsbane who said
Tormund Giantsbane was talking about Ygritte.
And he said, but he also said he was like, how Jon will never be a kneeler again.
Yeah, yeah, he does
I
say
think
that,
that
yeah.
points to, like, that he, like, we've talked about him maybe if being elected the new commander of the Night's Watch, and now we have this red woman, like, looking at him. I see great things in the fire of his future.
I just don't want him to stay at the Wall anymore. Like, I feel like...
Where would he go?
Anywhere.
North?
Anywhere.
Are we talking about Jon?
Yes, Jon. I just don't want him at the Wall anymore.
I feel like that's where everyone's going. It's everyone's going to the Wall or going east.
I feel like he'll go...
This was the departure of King's Landing, in my opinion.
Yeah, a lot of people took off.
Yeah. Mm. It's the recentering of focus. Like, we've seen... It's going back to the line of... This war of, what, five or seven kings, whatever the line was, is nothing. The real... more lies to the north. And we're gonna have to see all these things. I think it's totally a spread out because all we have left there, I mean, I guess, well, I'm jumping ahead.
Getting carried away.
I'm like, but this doesn't make sense.
I don't know. I hope that John goes with Stannis or something. I just don't want him at the Wall anymore.
Well,
but he took an oath.
Yeah, we all did, right?
But John, I mean, it was John we're talking about here.
Yeah, he's broken an oath before. I feel like...
I don't remember taking any oaths.
I feel like Stan... The AfterBuzz oath.
We, the watchers of the buzz.
I just feel like maybe Stannis will ask him to come with him or whatever, and obviously he's the king, so whatever he says goes. I just don't want Jon there anymore.
Well, regardless at this point, I mean, we get Tormund saying that he doesn't suspect Jon will ever be a Kneeler again, and telling Jon straight up that Ygritte was in love with him,
yeah,
because she talked about killing him every day. So yeah, a true sign of love. And
we had another interesting thing with Tormund where he asked, am I going to die, and whose decision is it?
Yeah.
And Jon's like, Stannis, I guess? It's kind of a little moment of confusion.
Yeah, that's like the moment where it seems like Jon just doesn't care. Cause, yeah. Well, it's also Jon says, I don't have a king.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's that moment.
It's also, I think it calls the fact that you're getting these young people in power. Like, you have, like, Daenerys, who she's making all these big decisions, and she's looked at, like, as a conquering hero, just kind of like how Jon is. And then they get kind of stumped at certain points. Like, no one's really taught them how to lead. They've just taken command, and they've, like, been working their ways up, but they don't have, like, the knowledge of how to deal with people on every level.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, he can make someone a prisoner, but he doesn't know how to deal with a prisoner.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think he doesn't care either.
I mean, it's kind of a learn-by-doing thing. You're just sort of thrown into it, especially him. But after this, you do see him with Ygritte burning her alone. So he does have that moment of just trying to get that out in his own way.
I thought he might take her back to the cave. That was her, like, her last dying wish. Not saying anything would happen there.
Yeah, it's like, just like Kristen, that. Where are you going with this? This is getting really uncomfortable.
That, she said she wanted to stay there forever. That's okay. Where I would have taken her. Is that
far.
Fair?
Yeah.
And she
far.
Would probably become a White Walker by then.
Just saying.
It would have been nice.
Is her dying wish? Is mine too?
Yeah, oh, it's really? Okay, all right. So now we know. God forbid anything happens to Kristen.
Give me to Jon Snow and he'll
have her to go to a cave.
You go to a cave.
Yeah, she just wants to be in a cave. Okay. Right. So, elsewhere, north of the wall, we have Bran's storyline.
Closer to the cave.
Closer to a cave. Speaking of caves. Bran, Hodor, Jojen, and Meera all heading towards the tree as they see it, as Jojen is tired, he's collapsing, and with the beautiful sunrise. Exactly. I believe that was a sunrise.
It was like a sun peaking. Yeah.
It was a beautiful
green
screen.
It was like the clouds
screen.
Were like parted, yeah. And then beautiful they were closing
green
in on the sun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good thing they came there at the perfect time of day to see that sight.
It was. Yeah. It was magical.
It was the
magical.
Vision.
It was magical until skeletons popped out of the ground.
Rumpelstiltskin skeletons.
It started killing everything and slicing them up.
I knew it was going to be protected. Mm.
So these weren't whites or White Walkers. These were
skeletons. What these things are.
These are people who were frozen in the lake underneath.
But had they...
I don't know what they are.
These
are
skeletons from
He-Man,
Masters of the Universe. Obviously.
They are some sort of skeletons that don't die, but I guess die with fire as well.
Yeah.
Fireballs.
Yeah, so we get
that
tons,
you can chuck.
Yeah.
A lot more magic.
And with really good aim.
It was very that.
Very precise.
Like the stereotypical fantasy came on this one where our character was throwing fireballs.
And they like exploded just in time and like always hit their target.
It looked like more so than necessarily a fireball. It was some sort of package, and then when it hit the ground, that was when it blew up.
Excuse me?
It was fireballs!
We're calling them fireballs.
But I mean, there's something where it was some sort of concoction, maybe, that they put together. But still, this is a very magic coming into the show.
Gotcha, Dave. Exploding packages. Got it.
Okay. I was excited. I was honestly excited to see the children, even though we only saw one child. The child with the magic fireballs or exploding packages, whichever you prefer.
And the force field?
Those two things just don't really go hand in hand.
Force field.
Yes, the invisible force field was awesome too. I just was excited to see more magic because I used to not like fantasy shows and stuff like that, but the show being grounded in reality, it's a lot more believable, and you want to believe it, and you want there to be magic, and you want there to be exploding fireballs. But now I love fantasy thanks to Game of Thrones. And I was excited for the fire. I mean, what did you guys think? Was this something in the book? Did you know it was coming? How did you feel about it?
Obviously, I'm not caught up on books because I watched the show first. I mean, I liked the fireballs and the creepy child voice, and I even liked the guy who is the guy slash three-eyed raven slash a thousand eyes slash one. Who knows? But I was thoroughly creeped out. I was not excited at all. I was so confused why there was one child in the children and they're in a forest of bones under the tree and I don't like it. It's creepy, it's weird, and I would not want to be there or take his advice. He's scary. He's not.
Do you think maybe those were the bones of the first men?
I think it's the bones of the children that they're cannibally eating.
I thought they were the roots of the tree. Yeah.
Now, Bran was definitely crawling through some bones. Oh. But, I don't know. Bran's story is easily the most stereotypical fantasy-esque. There's just so much magic in it, and it's weird how it blends with the rest of the show. Like, you're in King's Landing, and you have Cersei dealing with all this stuff, and then you all of a sudden go to the North, and you're with Bran, and there's fireballs and different things.
And whites and white walkers.
And everything is magic.
Yeah.
And now that we've got the Red Woman there. It's every magical element possible is
no.
up there.
Getting in the north,
no.
north of the wall.
There's no dragon up there yet.
Okay, true.
That we know
true.
Of.
Oh,
true. But dragons
well,
are real.
Are just animals.
Bran might fly.
They're alive. Yeah, so
ladies,
chat, we have Andrew SF saying Sinbad skeletons, and my thought as I was watching was Jason and the Argonauts.
I was Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
I was with you.
Yeah, that's what I was doing.
Pirates.
There we go. There we go.
I knew it. I knew they were coming.
You prepped. You prepared.
Pirates are coming. Did you... Who's this three-eyed raven guy?
The one who I'm going to want to call the wizard.
Gandalf.
The wizard in the tree who's, like, intertwined. Yeah.
What I didn't like was he was the stereotypical long white beard, long white hair wizard type. Like, really?
You just wanted it to be Oberyn Martell brought back and look like Oberyn, right?
That would have been fine.
Okay.
It was Gendry.
Just so we're clear.
But I just didn't like that he looked like the stereotypical wizard. Like, that bothered me. Like, can we change it up?
No.
It's like
not
every
possible.
Fantasy
you,
ever
no,
depicts
can't.
A wizard as the same.
It's because
I mean,
wisdom brings.
They do.
It's because to be wise, you have to be old. And then you clearly decide to grow a beard because that's part of being wise, so you can stroke it as you're thinking.
If I was like. If I was a very old wizard man, I would totally have a white beard. So it's justifiable.
I guess they all, like, agree to these terms. But I was just kind of disappointed in the way he looked because we've been traveling for a very long time to get there. And
what
I wanted...
did you want him to look like?
I mean, like, he could have been a man behind a red curtain. That would have been better.
Wizard of Oz style. So, no. Guest 80 saying, no longer interested in this storyline. It can be left out and not matter. I was actually kind of expecting people to be more interested now that they actually found what they've been searching for.
I'm interested more because I'm like, how many, like, what, who is this guy? What can he actually do? How old are they? Like, there's so many questions about what religion's, like, right in this world. We've got the old gods, we've got the new, we've got weird trees everywhere. Now this guy seems to be connected to one in a field of bones. I want to know, like, who he's killing and what he's watching. And
yeah, because he's kind of said he had eyes everywhere and he's been watching all of them since they were young. So that's kind of like, you know, from bird's eye view or a god's point of view. So it's like, if he does have these eyes everywhere, who is he exactly? I don't know. I was more excited by this that we finally got there, and I liked seeing the child, and I liked seeing this tree. It was so magical. I was glad that they finally got there by the end of the season. And I'm excited for next season.
I know we need them. Mm-hmm. Like, I just know we're going to need them. Like,
he seemed like he was connected to the tree. Can we talk about that? He seemed like he really was one with the tree. Like, I didn't see his legs. Like, Bran doesn't have legs. It seemed like he was just the tree.
I just saw it wrapped around his hands.
I saw his hands, but for legs, like, I felt like he was just grounded in that tree. He wasn't moving.
So had he been there, like, a long time? Kind of like
I think we've established he's
tree.
Old.
He's old, but...
I think one day he
how
was...
How long has he been there
he
since
he
was young?
He can't move, right?
This is probably what happened. He probably hugged one too many trees, and it hugged back.
So he was a hippie, is what you're saying. Jason Osborne, or no, Get Down Doe, sorry. Get Down Doe on the chat saying the three-eyed raven is old as heck, though, to be fair. I felt bad for Bran, because Bran was like, so will I be able to walk again? And he goes, no. You'll be able to fly.
Oh, my God.
Who wants that?
But I was, like, kind of glad, because I was like, that's your question? After all this way, no, like, for questions like,
yeah, it's like, Jojen died to bring you what you're missing. He's like, oh, so Jojen died for me to have legs again.
No, but
worth
he had lost. He died so he could find what he had lost.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's like, when was he able to fly? In what life?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point. It was what he lost. That was
the words.
But yeah, so Jojen, though, this is important to say Jojen dies in this episode. So Jojen's died, and it's indicated to us that, I mean, Jojen has green dreams, and he's able to see future prophecies, and that's his gift. So it's indicated that he knew all along that this was going to happen.
He just didn't care that much.
He knew he was going to die, because when he was locked up at Craster's place, he saw his hand on fire.
Yeah.
So he knew he was going to die by
he
exploding
really
package.
He was really slowing them down, and I kind of felt like they knew where they were going. And I was kind of like,
well, he needed them to...
They just made it. They just made it.
But now that they found it, his purpose has been fulfilled.
What is Mirror's magical power? Does she have anything?
She doesn't
have,
like, she's just a good
she's
hunter.
Just like, yeah.
She's a good fighter.
She was debatably good at skinning rabbits.
Yeah, and that, and she can hunt. She's good at hunting. She's skilled with she can hide really well. She can pop out and sneak around to people. So it's she's
kind of like a wildling,
right?
But of noble birth from south of the wall.
Mm.
Okay,
yeah,
that's my opinion of her.
She's a ninja.
But another thing, we have Bran harnessing his skill of taking over Hodor's body here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty brutal watching Jojen get stabbed over and over again by the skeleton.
Man. Like,
just over and over again. That was a relentless hand.
Hodor was getting hit in the face with a hammer.
Yeah.
It was very, like, eeky, like, eek.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Yeah,
it was a horror movie.
That's what bothered me, was that it was, like, a horror movie stabbing. It wasn't from anything human or alive.
That was a psychopath.
I'm just so curious about those skeletons. Were they whites that just lost all their skin and eyeballs and fleshy parts? Or are they just a weird new type of undead?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. That whole thing was a big question mark.
Yeah, and I know a lot of, there's some people on the...
Circle it! Put some red dots.
I think they're protecting the tree and anyone who comes at it. I think that the Three-Eyed Raven actually knows their existence and maybe put them there.
I was going to say, I think that in a way the Three-Eyed Raven man and his child lady are stuck there. I feel like if they ever really, like, they can't leave or mm-hmm. else they would have found... like that there's a reason he had to come
right
to them, and I think that they're, like, they're being watched and they need to find kind of a hero who can go back out into the world for their side of the battle.
Yeah,
so on the chat we have some people talking about some really major differences happening throughout this episode from the books, and I don't want to say anything for potential spoilers for people who only watch the show. But I know it's funny because I was talking to some of my friends, like my roommate, who's read the book, and we were talking about it, and he was talking about, wow, it's almost like the show is starting to be spoilers for book readers now.
Well, I think
certain things that are happening, you're like, okay, well, there are now multiple characters, I'm not going to say when, but just throughout the seasons, who have died, who didn't die in the book, so you're like, okay, well, I guess that character's not important.
Let me just say, for book readers out there, if you don't want spoilers for the rest of the books, just stop watching the show right now. Like, don't pretend that's not going to happen anymore, because we're at
right.
that point.
Yeah, we are at that point. But I mean, I just think it's
so
a good
convoluted
thing to bring up.
Like,
yeah.
I think that that's kind of widespread knowledge, that they do transfer, like, characters and different tasks to different people, and they try and keep everything kind of going, and they make it entertaining, and they make it make sense. But spoilers are going to happen on both
absolutely.
Ends. And so...
Yep.
So
deal with it.
It's gonna happen.
We're
don't,
sorry.
Yeah,
we're not sorry. Sorry, not sorry.
Oh!
Spoiler alert!
So let's move on to another topic and not spoil things. So, but yeah. Anyways, I thought that was an interesting point to bring up, but I don't want to talk too much about it for people when we watch the show. But let's go ahead and move over to Meereen, where we have Daenerys once again acting as queen, seeing various people and all these problems that now her new reign has kind of brought up, and the things that she didn't foresee. And the first thing that we get is Finez, I believe is the slave's name,
mm-hmm.
who's talking about how he doesn't have a purpose anymore, and all the mess halls for food for the free slaves, all the old people, which is what he is, get picked on by the young, and he's not able to eat, but now there's just nothing that he lives for. And before he was a teacher, and even though he was a slave, he actually didn't have a bad life. He liked what he was doing. He was teaching kids and... Well, the kids of his master. And he wants this life back. He really dislikes this change. And it's not that he wants her to completely revoke everything, but he wants the option to be a slave again.
Yeah, absolutely. Not all masters are these evil slave drivers that are cracking the whip and making all their slaves eunuchs and doing all these horrible things. Some people just like have these slaves. It's so horrible to say, but they're... Yeah. They're putting him in a position, a good position within their household as a teacher, and they're letting their children love this person and sort of be mm-hmm. part of their family, as opposed to just subjugating them completely and utterly.
Yeah, Finn said that he had respect there, but I think he's speaking for, like, a lot of people who, I think we can relate this to prison. You're in prison so long, that's what you know. A lot of people don't want to leave prison after they've been in chains for so long. That's mm-hmm. the life they get used to, and change is scary, and trying to integrate into this free world would be scary, especially when you're mm-hmm. old. You right. don't want to... Exactly. That's the thing
a,
that goes into
I think that's
it.
A very key point, and he even addresses it in his speech, is that I'm not young enough to create a new life, but I think that's also...
Right, like he compliments her and says the young slaves are really excited about this, but I'm too old.
Yeah,
yeah, because it would have been harder for him to make steps, but that also doesn't constitute. I'm not sure about this contract thing that she's now incited.
Scary,
because it is setting that bar of kind of limitation. Like if you enter in these contracts, you're going to hit a ceiling. It might be comfortable, it might be easy, or at first because you're not transitioning as much, but you're going to hit that ceiling and not be able to move past it.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how many slaves want to do this now that this contract's possible, but mm-hmm. it is, at least she had the foresight to think, let's just make it a year instead of for life.
Yeah,
that's true. I just don't understand why she can't just be like, well, go talk to him, and if he wants to have you in his house teaching his kids,
he can pay you.
Right.
Yeah, and even if Fenez is doesn't want to take money, he just wants his old life back, he can still get the room and get the food.
Yeah.
He just doesn't have to wear a collar. He can still teach the kids. Like,
yeah,
I just don't.
Weird.
Look, these slaves aren't that smart.
Yeah, it felt a little weird. It felt a little forced. But I can understand that, you know, there are going to be problems that arise, mm-hmm. and freedom can be a scary thing.
Yeah, I don't want to make choices.
Well, you know, I don't know what you guys
number
like.
Number one, all the slaves want to be slaves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Problem number two.
I don't know about you guys, but like after college graduation or something, it was like, oh my God, I'm on my own.
Yeah.
That's a good
like,
point.
I have to get a job and I can't go home and what's going on? Like,
no,
it's a little scary. Mm-hmm. It's a little scary. Yeah.
I have a lot of 30-year-old friends who are still living in the nest.
There we go.
Like when I first graduated, I was working at a full-time job in a big corporation and it was comfortable. And then when now I'm freelancing, it's scary, but it's like I have a lot more freedom.
Yeah.
But it's very scary because it's completely different.
Yeah.
As opposed to having that cushy comfort. So yeah, it definitely can be.
Game of Thrones is just like real life.
Absolutely, especially the next scene where we find out that we have another man come crying, hardly able to talk, holding this burnt corpse, this dead baby who turned out that Drogon has somehow gotten out and is killing babies.
Gotten out? I feel like he was just...
Or was just flying
out
around.
In general.
Or just out in general. But he's missing now, too. But yeah, he for some reason, has killed a baby.
That's 3 years.
We didn't see that one coming.
Yeah, I think we predicted that a long time ago she was going to lose control over her dragons, and it was really sad that moment when she walks into the catacombs and has to chain up her own children. But I'm just surprised that she actually did it that easily. That only him killing one child, she believed the guy rather than taking the side of her children. I guess that was enough, but it was just, like, to see the mother chain up her dragons.
Well, she knows it's true.
I guess, but also it's like, I think they're going to become more monsters by chaining them up. I don't think that anyone has ever become less of a monster by putting them in chains, Tyrion.
Just think that, for me, it was like, I just don't understand how they've not found anyone who knows a little bit about how her ancestors trained their dragons.
Well, maybe they knew How to Train Your Dragon 2, which just came out to theaters.
Which looks great. But they've talked about how, like, they were, like, these dragons were ridden and fought on and obviously well-trained. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand how there's any history of this. Like she just had this random guy, Finesse, who's, like, from the other side of the world, who's like, oh, don't worry, I know about your whole family history. And I'm like, but you haven't found anyone who knows anything about how they actually trained these dragons in the past?
Well,
I mean, they died out a long time ago.
And books aren't really all that abundant in this world.
I don't know. That's just my theory.
It seems like the Targaryens had a special link to the dragons. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, did they sit there and write it all down? Like, this is how I did it. It seems...
I'm just surprised that there seems to be, like, no knowledge of them whatsoever. When, like, I feel like so many people have been fascinated by them, and obviously, like, they won wars, you would think that there would be some knowledge base of how to deal with them.
Yeah, the knowledge base was dragons flew overhead and killed everybody. And that was the part we were fascinated in, was not how to train it, just like how to be like, how do you survive and how do you make a peace treaty so we don't get killed again?
How did she realize that she had to cook the meat in order for them to eat it? Did someone show her that? I don't remember. It was a few seasons back, but remember, like, the dragons almost died, and then either someone told her or it happened by accident that, like, she realized you had to cook
the
meat.
I think they started making fire themselves.
Yeah, I think once she's been around them enough to know that they always cook their food before they eat it,
But there was a time when she...
When they weren't eating.
I don't know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't sure if someone had taught her or what, but I'm just thinking... If someone did tell her, she needs that someone.
I don't know. I just remember the last time someone put a chain around these being when she had the Unsullied. It did not end well.
Mm-hmm. For Krasnus.
Well, guest ADE on the chat saying, I wonder if they will rebel against her. So having the same pondering as you.
There you go. You know who would probably know a lot about these dragons is Tyrion.
Oh.
Well,
he reads a lot of books. Wasn't he reading the dragon book in the first season?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, was he?
Wow. All the books are in King's Landing.
So she needs to get there first and then
go to the library. Yeah. Check out a few books.
But I think with her locking them up, that was to her, she's trying to be a queen. And as sad as it is to her, what she has to do, her goal is to be this queen. And as she was walking away, depressed with them, and like the catacomb was closing up, I was thinking, like, wow, she's so different now than she was, sort of this carefree person in the caravan with Khal Drogo, where just riding on the horses with them and their caravan and sort of sapping up everything. And now this is what she declared she wanted, and it's not really, she's starting to feel the weight of it, and it's not all she might have dreamed it was.
I agree with those thoughts.
Yeah. Life is not easy. The crown does not lay softly. What is that term? What is that?
That sounded nice.
The crown lays heavy on the head.
That is a term. But life's a little bit easier for Podrick and Brienne in this. Wait, no, it's not.
I was like, what did you watch?
Podrick and Brienne are we're going to go to next, with Podrick having messed up and lost the horses. They have to travel on foot.
That was a really weird introduction to the two characters, because they were kind of behind the hill, and she, like, wakes up, and her hair's all a little messy, and she's like, Podrick, you sex god, where are you? Like, it's kind of, like, a little awkward, but thankfully, that did not,
that was
scene, like, oh, yay.
You thought.
We gotta throw in some comedy in this episode.
Yeah.
With all the madness. So, she ends up seeing Arya training in her water dancing, and Arya immediately gripes over it at the Hound, stop taking a shit and get up. You choose the worst times.
Their relationship is so great.
Did the Hound and Arya steal their horses?
I think it was just Podrick had lost them. That was all that was.
Okay, because later on Arya had a horse.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that was.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe escaped horses or she killed somebody and took it.
She had money.
She did have money.
Yeah, but I thought it was interesting how, like, you could definitely see the spark in her eyes. She was like, oh, you're a lady and you have a sword.
Yeah, they had that immediate bond. Immediately, she didn't even draw her sword. Like, she put her sword down as soon as she realized it was another woman. And there was just that respect immediately. Which begs the question why she didn't. I know she doesn't want to be under anybody. But, like, she could have followed them, gone behind them. But, yeah, she wants to be on her own, and I'm glad she's going off on her own. And also,
I thought it was really interesting because how they really twisted the conversation to make it seem like Bran could be a bad guy. Like, all of the questions, she's had this whole story happen to her. And because of just these little specific moments, it does make her seem like she's either a traitor or out for this bounty or something. Like,
absolutely.
Well, for someone like Arya, it's a really hard story to believe because everything she's seen and that's happened to her has been the Lannisters destroying her family.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden there's this woman claiming to have worked for her mom, but yet she's working for the Lannisters. And for Arya, that just wouldn't click.
Right. Yeah.
And for the Hound as well, who's just like...
Well, it's also because Bran's so honest.
Yeah.
Like, with things she could have easily avoided. She was like, oh, well, where were you? And, like, my mom died. She could have been like, oh, I was away on a mission. Like, she... But
mission
Bran's
of
so,
bringing Jaime back to King's Landing.
Like, yeah. I didn't need to say all that. Like, she's so honest that her honesty makes her seem like a traitor. Or seems like a bad guy.
Absolutely. She is there. She's out wandering around on the good graces of Lannisters.
It just shows that life is complicated.
One specific Lannister.
One specific Lannister. But I mean, Tywin Lannister didn't do anything when she came to King's Landing. Nobody arrested her or anything for Renly's possible death or whatever.
Well, she kind of came having helped Jaime, so it's just like, okay, you kind of get a free ride for that one.
Oh, absolutely. But I mean, by the Lannister's good graces, she's able to leave the city and go off on her own and have a sword and armor and...
Really good sword.
Really good sword.
So the hound finishes.
Yep, and the hound finishes, and then they start arguing and over what's best for Arya. We get this great moment where the hound points out just how naive Brienne is and the fact that there's nowhere for Arya right now. Her family's dead. Her aunt just got killed. Everyone's gone, so there's just nowhere for her.
There is nowhere. I'm trying to think of what safe harbor they have.
But... I had a very Bravos. Safe harbor.
What's that?
They were going to all fall in love and be one happy fighting family with Podrick on the side. And they were just going to be so happy and giant, and I loved it.
Oh, that's not the hound at all.
Yeah, George R. R. Martin is laughing at you.
It could have happened. It could have been one of those, you know, meet cutes where they're like punching each other and all of a sudden they're like rolling on the ground and they're like, no, wait, you're awesome. I love you. Yay.
Yay. Nope.
This is what's happening in my imagination.
Not going to happen. But we have this. Oh, go right ahead.
I was just going to say, this battle, I like hated it the whole time. I was like, no, because I love them both.
But it was a crazy battle.
It was really well done.
But before we get to the battle, we have this beautiful moment where the hound's like, oh, are you going to watch over her? And Brienne says back to him, he's like, is that what you're doing? Are you watching over Arya? And we have this moment where the hound just goes, I am.
Yeah.
And it was kind of nice.
He actually admits what he is.
He was, because we've had so many episodes where he's like, you're just walking money to me, just going around. And then it was so nice to just have him say, like, you know what, I am looking over her.
Yeah, absolutely. That touching moment with him where he's starting to get attached to her.
Absolutely. But then they fight.
Right, but then they fight. And man, it's actually, as much as I do like both characters, it was cool to see a fight like that where you really don't know. You're like, I can't choose a side because I like them both. I don't want either of them hurt. And that's just, again, this whole great thing with Game of Thrones where there really are complications like that and all this gray matter where neither of them are necessarily bad. It's just...
miscommunication.
Shit happens.
This was a brutal fight.
This was a really brutal fight.
Crazy.
Especially after the Hound got bested and decided to grasp the Valyrian steel blade, it got so dirty.
We had that. We had groin kicks
and punches.
We had biting ears off. Although I thought his ear was completely burned off. I don't know what she kind of munched
on. I thought it was like the back of his neck when I saw it happen real quickly.
Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever means necessary.
All I know is it was vile. And also fascinating.
And fascinating.
I was like, wow, this is done really well, but it's really painful to watch. Can't you just be friends?
Oof.
Yeah.
But this is kind of a depowered hound because he's weakened from his wound, which they mentioned last episode. So all those who are doing an argument and say the hound would never lose, he was depowered a bit on this one.
Yeah.
Well, it's every major character we've seen Brienne fight so far has been depowered in a way. Jaime was, they were kind of equal, but Jaime only had one hand to fight with at the time.
He was handcuffed.
Because he was handcuffed.
Yeah. So, foreshadowing.
But yeah, so he was handcuffed, so he couldn't really fight fully.
And she also couldn't kill him.
Right.
Like, so they were both, and then in
but
this
still
one,
a very
she just
equal
walked
battle.
20 miles.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, I'm just saying both of those instances with these brutal characters, they
you
weren't at their best.
You go walk 20 miles and fine.
I'll walk 20 miles, okay? You watch me. I'm going to stand up and walk right now. I'll walk 20 miles. I'll be back.
20 miles.
See you in a while.
And there he goes.
I liked how Brienne sort of gave him that, I don't want to kill you, sir. Because she very easily could have killed the hound at that point.
She could have killed him when she had the sword to him before
he
grabbed it.
But she chose not to, and she said, I don't want to kill you,
sir.
Very
true.
So we already knew that was kind of her saying, like, look, we can end this the nice way. But, of course, he will not kneel to anyone.
Yeah.
And he has to carry on
the
fight.
He must be a wildling.
No.
I thought he was going to be
just,
fine.
Because he wouldn't kneel. That was the...
Yeah.
They could have joined forces. You know, they think the same.
I wanted them to travel together. I did.
But then That sounded like a Dr. Seuss moment there. So yeah, he ends up getting kicked off of the ledge.
Was
and,
it a kick?
Or I guess kind of just ends up toppling over.
Headbutt kick. Yeah. He ends up over.
Some brutal rolling. Move in that and fight.
It looked a lot more steep as he was first falling than the second time we saw him falling.
When
first,
the shot changed?
Yeah, when the shot yeah. changed, it
looked... Yeah, it looks like a drop-off at first.
Yeah, it does. I'm like, oh, he did. And then we get the second shot where he's just kind of rolling down the hill. So, like you, Sarah, I hope he's not dead.
I think that we have two Clegane's in very near-death situations.
Yes. Yeah.
And obviously something could happen to both. There might go through some changes. Who knows what changes could happen? We saw some sort of broken leg on the hound. We've seen, like, pus. Would that be how you describe the mountain? I don't even know what
Venom.
Was on.
It was... He was bit by the viper, I believe.
Yeah, but, like, it was, like, bleh. But they both might go through some changes. And they're both on the brink of death.
So Get Down Doe on the chat correcting me, saying Loras wasn't depowered when Brienne beat him in the tourney match. So just in terms of Brienne's fighting history.
Neither was the bear in the pit, right?
Oh, no. Well, yeah, right? Yeah. I was like, wait a second. So, yeah, what the hell am I not doing too hot as he has bones sticking out of his knee and begging for mercy from Arya in this really dark moments. And then real quick, this was after Arya had hid away from Brienne, who's searching and clearly choosing not to be with Brienne. But yeah, this was really dark.
Rory did such a fantastic job acting in this scene. I got a bit choked up when he started begging for it at the end. I was like, oh my gosh.
I thought they both did. Though, like Arya's yeah. stillness.
She was so detached.
She did not wince.
Yeah, no. But it was just...
It was creepy.
And with the two together, how they put that scene together where he was, there were like these like cracks and these dark turns, and it was such a well done scene. And it was just like silent.
Yeah, and you get the fact that the Hound, he has such a depressing and sad life. That mm-hmm. when he talks about raping Sansa, so he would have one happy memory because he has nothing. There's nothing that has happened in his life that has been happy for him. And I mean, that's why he's always been so brutal. Everything he talks about is just what knights really are, is just killing machines. And that's always been what he preaches and talks about, because that's been his life. It's just been really dark ever since the mountain pushed his face into a fire.
Yeah.
I think that Arya was the best thing that ever happened to him. And I think that he knows that. And that's why he chose to fight for her until death, perhaps. But I just feel like if this was really his last moment, then we would have seen him shut his eyes. I think you're right, Sarah. I don't know what's going to happen next season, but if we don't see his eyes closed, I don't think he's dead. I think someone could come along.
Yeah, maester could totally jump out from behind.
Absolutely.
Is this becoming like a law in Game of Thrones that if they don't die on screen, they're not dead? We've got the Hound right now. Alistair Thorne, we talked about earlier. Gregor Clegane, you've all been asking. We saw him. He's not quite dead yet.
Yeah.
It seems like it's becoming this thing where if they don't die on screen, they're not dead.
At least if they're like a
major character. I agree with
that.
Feel
that way. Just because, like, we still have, what's his name, Benjen Stark missing.
Yeah.
Like, he could pop up anytime. And it's just, like, because of the laws of, like, the White Walker coming back to life, because everyone, like, does use fake names, does use, like, random circumstances happen all the time in the show. It's hard for me not to, like, put that, like, maybe they'll come up in that one instance where you're like, who's this dark shadow coming from? And you're like, oh, it's Hound, yay!
I'm so glad you said that to me, though, because I really thought he was done. And then you said, wait, I don't think he's dead. And then I thought about it, and I was like, yeah, you're right. Like, we would have seen him close his eyes or something. Mm-hmm. Like, the way she walked away, I think that she's hoping that he'll heal, too. Although, I liked that part where he was like, come on, I'm just another name on your list. You promised me you'd kill me. I loved that part. Because it was true. Like, she had been promising him all that time that she was going to kill him. And she very well may, but it's not right now. Yeah.
She did not give him the gift of death.
Yeah, like, in the end, she wouldn't even give him mercy. And just ended up taking his money and then just walked away after taking his money.
And watched him suffer for a little bit.
Do you think that was her way of punishing him more? Or do you think that was her way of saying, you know what, you helped me out here? I'm not going to kill you? What was it? Was it a nice thing on her side, or was it a bad thing on her side?
I felt whenever she came to sit with him, I felt like good about it. I felt like she was coming to be with him in his dying moments because they had become this bond had formed and they had become friends now. So I felt like when she first got there, it was like she was paying her respects and like staying there with him. And then after everything he said, I think maybe she changed her mind. Maybe she would have given him mercy before, but I don't know. I think her walking away, she also kind of has hope that he'll be all right.
When she knelt down, she just took his money. That was
She took his money. She walked away,
but that was after everything that they had said to each other.
Exactly. I don't know. She just walked that valley, and there's a shadow, and I still felt like it was saying the valley of the shadow of death.
I like that.
And just going, but I don't know how I feel. I don't know if she killed Madame Rashid, because the only thing was she almost offered to give him water. That was her one act of movement in his speech. Of course, it was before he said he wanted to rape her sister.
And he brought up Micah. Let's not forget Micah, because that was the first reason that she hated the Hound.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the reason, I think.
Yeah, the reason in the first season.
So it's like she knows the Hound so much better than she knew Micah.
Now.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, she barely knew Micah. But we should probably move on to after this scene where we get Arya finding a dock and begging to go north and possibly to the wall somewhere, like maybe that's where she'd go.
That's got to be what she's thinking.
Right, because John could be alive. I mean, she doesn't know, but that's like one family tie that she knows, like he'd be at the wall. But the captain is refusing to take her there. They're going to Braavos. Sorry, you're crazy. Yep. You don't want to go where everyone's dying.
What luck?
And she flashes back to Jaqen, giving her the token, the coin. Thank you.
Jaqen the iron.
Yeah, and then saying, if you ever find somebody who goes to Braavos, give them this coin and say, Valor Morghulis.
Valor Dohaeris.
Thank you, sir. Let's go to Braavos.
Let's go.
Okay.
What does this coin mean? I know, obviously, like, we've gotten in the intro, like, every week that, like, the coin goes down the track at Braavos, and we've always known this is going on. But I just want to know, does her specific coin mean something, or do, like, all coins just mean, like, safe passage to Braavos? Like, is there something even more special about the coin that she gave him? I'm confused.
I don't know. It's different because it's not a silver coin. It's an iron coin, which is pretty worthless in that world. So it's not like it's the monetary value is not high.
Well, I mean, when you look at it, it's kind of messed up in a way. There's something different about it. Like, she has
like the face is all messed up. So it could be any face. So, seven faces, perhaps.
What was it, like the men of a thousand faces or something like that?
The thousand eyes and one was the three.
But there's another line that he, like, when she's parting from when she gets the coin, where he's like, I'm a man of, I think it was like a thousand faces or some number.
How many does she have left for him to kill?
I think that was all three were taken care of at that moment. I think that was really? Wrapped up with all three. Yeah.
Okay.
So, regardless, though, she ends up getting safe harbor.
Wait, do you mean for him to kill for her?
Wait, who, what? Yeah.
Remember, she sacrificed Hagar.
She sacrificed her last kill because she named him. And then she was like, fine, I will unname you if you get me and my friends out of here.
Yeah.
So she, like, gave up her last kill, I think.
Did she give it up, or does she still have one more?
I think that's it. I'm pretty sure.
We'll say.
But regardless, this coin has a lot of meaning to the Braavosi. And we'll see what happens with her storyline. So let's go ahead and move forth.
She's a pirate now.
Great ending, by the way.
That was a great ending.
That was a cool ending.
With her in the Game of Thrones theme song. That was a good remix of the theme song, too. I like that one.
It was nice. Mm-hmm.
So let's go ahead and move over to King's Landing, the Father's Day edition of King's Landing, where we start with the Mountain, who's has manticore venom in him, which would seem to be from the Viper.
The Viper.
Yeah, and he is dying, and we've got Maester Pycelle, Cersei, and Qyburn. Qyburn, who I believe in the show, they show him having been with Jaime in the show. Yeah. Is that correct? Okay,
good. He did that, and then he came down to King's Landing.
Yeah, so he came with Jaime and helped Jaime, but he's not a true maester. So Maester Pycelle doesn't really trust his methods.
Yeah, Qyburn was kicked out of the citadel where the maesters train
using dead people or basically killing people to see what happened to them.
For weird
he's
shit.
He's a scientist at heart.
Yeah.
And I think he's making his own Lannister Frankenstein as we speak.
He'll come a little bit different. Yeah, so he's doing something to the mountain, and we're not sure what, but it's like just this weird indication if he's going to come up different.
But not bigger.
Paisel thinks that.
Yeah, but what does that mean?
What does that mean?
Not bigger, unfortunately.
Not bigger. Yeah.
He's going to be changed.
Changed man. After you drain him of all his blood, as he's doing in that end scene there.
Yeah, just another question mark.
Yeah.
And gaining Cersei's trust.
But after this, true. And then after, Cersei sides with Qyburn here. And after siding with Qyburn, she then goes immediately to speak with Tywin and is trying to assert herself and refusing to marry Loras and threatening him by saying that it was incest for Tommen and just telling everyone.
I thought she was going to pull out, like, we're poor. I'm going to tell everyone we're poor.
That's what you thought?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Nope, your legacy is a lie.
That's crazy. Now, I always thought Tywin knew.
I did too.
Do you think he did know and he just...
Denial.
It was just one of those
denial.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. It had to be.
I really thought he always knew and he was just doing what he could to make it not obvious. I thought he's smart. I thought he had to know.
Exactly. And I think they gave Tywin lines earlier in the season or like previous seasons where he sort of mentioned something about it. Like he said to,
rumors.
He says to Cersei, he's like, you're going to marry Loras and have, it might have been Jaime, where he's like, you're going to marry a wife and you're going to have a legitimate child or something like that.
Yeah,
he said, you're going to have an actual child.
It's a very clear indication that he knows.
Yes. And then all of a sudden they change it around so.
But it's sort of like the lies we tell ourselves. Like, you can make yourself believe something when you want to.
I am a professional football player.
Okay. Moving on to reality. they did pull that rug out from under us, because before they made it very clear that maybe he did know, and then in this moment they had Cersei give that, like, I'm a lawyer and I'm, like, giving you the truth right now, sort of, like, persuading him to believe that, yes, it is indeed incest. So I don't know. I don't know why they did that. Because they wanted... It did look like they were trying to get us to think that he didn't know or he didn't believe it or whatever.
Yeah.
Bad day for Tywin here.
Absolutely.
But she also admits that she was going to give Tommen the essence of Nightshade. She openly admits that.
Yeah, that was kind of creepy. Like, but we see her... I don't know. I'm afraid to say I liked Cersei in this moment. But I liked that she kind of stepped up and she's like, you know what, Dad? I'm sick of these stories where you win. This isn't going to be one of those moments. I'm a grown-up now, and I'm going to win a battle.
A lot of people had those discussions with him today.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I don't like how she did it. She's like, well, I'm going to, you know, make you feel bad about your daughter and your son having sex. But the fact that she was like, you know what? I can win a battle. I can do this.
Yeah.
I choose love.
She decided not to go with the fact of asserting that she's the queen regent and instead asserting that she'll just tell everyone about the incest. Okay. So Cersei goes on to meet with Jaime, following Cersei around at the beginning, and Jaime's pissed off about Tyrion, and she doesn't even really address it. She just starts making out with him.
He's not my brother.
You.
I choose you, Pikachu. That's what I was thinking of the whole damn time.
My only note for this time was sexy time was the only thing I wrote. I was just kind of shocked, though. I was very shocked that this is how her character turned, because I didn't feel like... I felt like there was a huge jump between where we saw her mentally last and this episode.
I'm not sure if this is, like, a greater turn into madness or... Because it seemed like a very almost like, okay, now I figured out my life. I just have to choose this love. And I was like, you were going crazy and you were a drunk. When did you have this moment of clarity? And...
I think when she won the victory over her brother, over Tyrion. He's dead. She won. She's like, yes.
That moment kind of empowered her.
And
absolutely.
Now she's like, she feels like she just got a victory over her father.
Yep.
And she's also a crazy drunk, but that's okay.
But Jamie tosses aside all of his hopes for her. Goodbye, blank pages. Hello, sister.
Did you guys kind of feel like her love for him had been lost somewhat this season, and then, like, suddenly she just, like, jumped on him?
Oh, absolutely.
So it's like, I just felt like that was sort of a huge jump for me to see her character go this far this episode.
It's like after a couple battles, she just wants some ballast, her blood's boiling, she needs to... You know, it, settle down.
Like, I can totally see the conversation with Tywin. I can see that. Her finally feeling like she needed to have that conversation. But jumping Jaime, that seemed out of nowhere.
Everything that we've seen this season, I agree that it was a jump. I do think it was a jump from the previous episodes we've seen. But on an aside, Get Down Doe saying in the chat, Tywin had to talk with Queen of Thorns, hinting that he knew about the incest. So there were multiple conversations there. So, yeah, some weird jumps around here. But we get some awesome moments right after this where we have Tyrion in the dungeon and Jaime. Even after the scene where him and Cersei are together, he still goes and frees Tyrion.
Which had me so scared.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I was in a panic for this entire scene. You don't understand. I literally thought Cersei was going to jump out and kill him.
Too.
And that was like his gift to her.
Nah.
Like,
me too.
Like, and you get to kill your brother.
I thought
like,
so too.
I was literally like, oh my gosh, Cersei's going to kill him. Cersei's going to kill him. I was literally shaking.
Because whenever anything good starts to happen to a character, you know they're in trouble.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, I think it's safe to say at this point, definitely, that earlier in this season, Tyrion had told Jaime that he didn't do it, that he didn't kill Joffrey, and that's a huge change in the book. In this moment during the escape, Tyrion tells Jaime the opposite, that he did kill Joffrey.
In the book?
Yeah, and he lies to Jaime, saying that he, in a moment of frustration... But I think it's like it's
I don't want to get into the book discussion, but he's.
I just think it's a major difference. I think it's worth noting, okay. and I don't think it's going to come up at all. So I guess people are going to hate on me again. But I just don't think it's like this is something that's so established. I don't think it's ever going to change in the show. So I just thought it was worth bringing up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So regardless, Tyrion now set free, thanking Jaime for his life and just this really brotherly love moment and bonding moment.
And goodbye moment.
Absolutely. And they there's actually a kiss. He kisses them. And I was like, whoa, this is like, wow. Like, I don't know if I've seen a man kiss another man on the cheek in this entire show.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, oh my God, this is really brotherly love. It was nice. It was a nice little moment.
Yeah. And we also find out that Varys now is helping Tyrion escape. And if you remember, Varys actually spoke against Tyrion during the trial, so now he's helping Tyrion.
Well, yeah, there was that moment where Tyrion says, oh, you swore that you'd help me do something, and then while all the eyes are on Varys, he can't help Tyrion, so he gives the testimony hurting Tyrion and everything. But as he's walking away, there's sort of that moment where he kind of gives him a look. He's like, I know how I'm going to help you, but this isn't it.
Yeah,
it's going to be in the last episode of the season.
Tyrion even asks him as he's leaving, can I ask you one question? Like, you thought I was going to save everyone. And I can't remember Varys' reply, but it was very, like, not taking a side. Do you guys remember that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It was a very not right now.
Yes. That was his answer.
Yep.
So I think either Kristen or Sarah, I think one of you guys predicted that I thought Tyrion was going to end up escaping the dungeon somehow in one of the episodes, and now it's happening. So Tyrion escaping the dungeon, and he ends up deciding to sidetrack. Take a little side track to the Hand's Tower, the Tower of the Hand.
Mm.
And you indicated by you see the hand on the cloak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you revisit the lion ironwork that they had a frame of earlier in the episode with Tywin's conversation with Cersei.
Absolutely.
So they use that same like framing again.
Right. And turns out Shay is there in bed and clearly has been sleeping with Tywin, who is so against Tyrion's whoring, so against everything. And now Shay, who was the one person Tyrion loved, again, this betrayal by sleeping with the one person, his
and
father.
Calling him my lion.
Yeah. Oh.
I don't understand Shay in this moment. Did Shay, what does she want? Is she clearly a whore who wanted, like, riches? Or is that what we're supposed to think of her? Because when she was protecting Sansa and she was side by side with Tyrion, I believe that she loved him. And in this moment, I was completely confused by her character. I thought when she was in the courtroom, I thought she was just getting back at Tyrion for sending her away. And I thought that she really loved him. Yeah. But in this moment, I have no idea.
I can't explain it. Like, literally, I think that it was almost like, oh, I got the first half of these scripts, and now I have to completely change my character for the second half of these scripts, because this is not what I was thinking. Because I did believe her. I did believe their love, and I felt like that was her choice, and that's what they were directing her to, and then it was all just stripped away, and I...
Yeah.
Don't get it.
And this is something I talked about when the previous episode, where her character is very different in the books. And this is the scene pretty much exactly almost as it happens in the book. And like everything that she does in this moment happens, but the whole love thing with Tyrion, it's not really there in the book. So it really is pretty indicated that she's a lying whore. That really is what seems to be indicated in the books. Whereas here in the show, we really had that whole thing of like
she
seemed to love him. So yeah, it's a weird twist for the show end.
Like she rejected money. Like this whole thing is about money, and now she rejected money from Varys.
Well, I mean, my only argument, I'm trying to play devil's advocate because I'm kind of with you guys on this. It doesn't make too much sense, but I can see like, okay, she loved him. It didn't work out. She doesn't have that love anymore.
So
it's gone. So
hand.
She's back to her old job. She's like, oh my God, the richest man in the Seven Kingdoms, as far as anyone knows, is like, wants to sleep with me. I'm a whore. All right, let's do this. Like,
yeah.
That's the only thing I can come up with. I know that's a bit far-fetched, but...
I think that's the explanation. That's the only explanation,
well,
really.
I would have been fine with that if she didn't say my line again. That was where it was like, okay, you're just a whore and none of this was real, and I think that Tyrion felt that way too.
Yeah,
but
she's good at her job.
We kind of get the whole, like, love is worth killing for, or you'll kill the one you love, with the whole, like, Ygritte and Jon, and now with the whole Tyrion and Shae. So it's sort of like a weird message here.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I think for Tyrion specifically, it was just this huge moment of betrayal where it was the girl that he loved. And first it was the one hit that he had to take of her standing against him. That was the hardest moment, and great acting by Peter Dinklage in that episode. But now in this episode, then the one person who's always hated him his entire life. And it's like after a relationship or a breakup, there's always like the one person where you're like, I just don't want my girlfriend to sleep with that one person, and this is that person for him. It's Tywin. It's his wife. This is that one person.
I don't want any of my ex-girlfriends to sleep with my dad, please.
but I mean, especially for Tyrion, though, like Tywin's that one person. Mm-hmm. So it's even that further knife in the gut and that wrench. So, yeah, just that really brutal moment where he ends up strangling her, and
Did he feel like he needed to? Because otherwise she would kill him.
She reached for the knife first.
Yeah, absolutely.
She made the first lunge.
Yeah, certainly. He knew that she was going to kill him. Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt about that.
Did she deserve it?
And he did try to save her too, even though it was like this breaking of trust to her and love. It was like, and especially with the words he said, he did try, and he was trying to do the right thing.
Does he choke her with the gold necklace around her neck? I mean, that's just kind of like, that's how someone like She's that like, should go. Yeah, if and, you're a gold digger, be strangled by what you're,
it's
you know,
poetic justice.
For.
Well, was that the necklace that
it wasn't
Tyrion
the lion necklace
gave her earlier? No.
Oh.
Tyrion gave her a necklace, I don't know if it was early this season or late last season, but he gave her a necklace.
The necklace that I'm remembering is the lion necklace that he gave to the redhead. That's the necklace that I'm remembering. Yeah, do you remember the lion one? And that's why Cersei thought that she was his whore, because is that necklace? I don't remember this necklace, but I could be wrong.
I think he did give her one, though, but that's even,
he
strangled
did.
Her, gave her the weapon she'd die by, that's even more poetic justice.
So Get Down Doe on the chat asking, without spoilers, anyone think Shae was with Tywin the entire time, and Bronn took her from Tywin in the camp in the earlier seasons, and...
That crosses my mind a lot, but... I don't. I think it's a bit far-fetched.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think she would have left mind. With Tyrion from the camp had that been the case.
Right,
her
storyline's sort of done now, and I feel like it would be too late at this point for us to get that secret.
Yeah,
so,
especially the other person end of that storyline is also done, as we get to
Tyrion
now picking a crossbow off of the wall, and...
I was immediately like, who is that for?
The crossbow.
I was like, who is that arrow for?
Who did you think
opens the latrine?
Who did you think was behind door number one?
I was like...
Or door number two, I guess I should say.
Who's got the pun this episode? Don't steal my reputation.
Were you thinking possibly Cersei?
I'm
curious what you thought.
100% Tywin.
Yeah.
I was thinking possibly Cersei, but after he had just left Shae's, I was like, probably Tywin. But I just couldn't imagine it at that point. that he would kill his father. And then I started imagining it because it was happening.
I thought so because, especially when they revealed him, I felt like they... Because I've always enjoyed Tywin as a character.
Me too.
He's always portrayed as so, like, strong and cunning and for his family. And then, to me, they just slowly stripped that away from him this episode. And it started with Cersei. It started with him. She, like, ripped away, like, his whole conception of family, right. Like, with the lines of, like, oh, you talk so much about your family, but you're more or less a liar and stupid. Like, she ripped away his family. She ripped away his cunning. She ripped away a lot of things I respected him for. And then it went to Shay. And I was like, oh, you're a hypocrite. Like, one of the things you've shunned your son for, you do yourself.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Absolutely.
And then he's, like, on the toilet. And I was like, you've broken this man down. I was like, okay.
That makes sense.
I understand why you're gonna let him go.
That's a good point that he's killed on a toilet, though, because he's been broken down at that point.
That's like the most, like, shameful place.
Well, it's so degrading because he rules the Seven Kingdoms, pretty much. He's the power behind everything.
He's been the foundation.
And for the most powerful man in the Seven Kingdoms to just be shot to death on the toilet, it's just so degrading. Mm-hmm. So humiliating.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it's like, what do you... After everything that happened in this episode, like, what do you respect him for? Like, there's nothing you respect him for anymore.
Well, that was... Yes, but in the court of public opinion, I mean, everybody sees him as this golden figure, I mean, except his enemies. But even they respect him because he's this great general. And now the word's going to get out.
It just
broke him down, like you said.
He was basically the foundation for this family's existence that this house was sitting on. And now that he's gone... They are just going to be so weakened and not even an opponent to
maybe
any enemy.
Maybe they'll actually be happy, though.
maybe Cersei if they go to Dorne.
Family? But yeah. he really is the pillar of strength of the family. Mm-hmm. He's the one who brought them up from when... I mean, like, his whole story is that their family used to be laughed at because of Tywin's father. And he stopped that, and he was the one who brought them up and made them a respectable family.
Exactly.
And then,
Reigns of Castamere.
Yeah, the Reigns of Castamere, which starts playing as he dies. That's the song in the background.
Nice.
I wonder if they'll ever play it again.
That's what I was thinking.
That's not good. Like, they've played it so much this season.
Well, Lannisters are starting to die off, so you never know.
I think they're all going to have to take some new names.
Lannisters.
Oh!
Ooh, that for long! Pen to the neck. Pen to the jugular.
So Tywin ends up in this scene dying. And I do think that's a great point, though. It's just like the other thing with Tyrion that you're saying is that really his storyline with Tyrion was that he kept on shaming Tyrion with the whore thing. Like, that was Tyrion's first wife and what he made Tyrion go through by having his wife seem like this whore and just, like, giving her... like a soldier, and every soldier would be another gold coin, something to that extent, and just like really publicly ridiculing Tyrion for sleeping with whores and constant with that, and that's what he ended up dying for in the end, and what pissed off Tyrion. But after this, Tyrion...
Also, I just thought it was very interesting, the writing style of this scene. Like, for me, just the word, they tossed around, like, you are my son, I'm your son. Like, each of them said son, like, three times. And I feel like we've never really gotten that from their characters. Like, it's always avoided. Like, I think the one time it sounds out to me is when Tywin was saying, you are not my son.
Right.
Yeah.
And, like, they had this total, like, poetic switch around at the end. And it was just used as such... It was used as a weapon itself in that conversation. And I thought it was really powerful and, like, very... poignant.
Mm.
Question for you guys. Tywin said, do you really think I'd let my son be hanged and all that stuff? Do you guys think that they would have had a talk in the chamber? Do you think that Tyrion was actually going to be executed, or do you think he wasn't going to let that happen?
Was he just trying to save his own skin by saying that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was curious. No, I was curious too. I was going to ask that myself.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I honestly don't know with this character.
I think that it's a combination. I think that if we hadn't seen the conversation with Cersei, where he lost basically two of his heirs, like, maybe he was considering saving him because he was the only one left, if Cersei told.
True, but during that...
But then I'm like, in general, I do feel like he kind of went back on his word on everything in order. It was like, I wouldn't actually kill you, which earlier in the day you just said you would. And you're like, then he goes down the path of like, you are my son, and all these other random things that I'm like, well, I think you are just saving your ass.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that he was going to execute him. I think that At one point, he did say, yes, it's true, I always wanted you dead or whatever. And that was the point where I actually believed what he was saying. Yeah. So I think he was going to execute him.
So the point I got out of this is lock your bathroom doors. That's what I got out of it.
Always do.
But after this scene, Varys knows what happened, and he's like, oh, we got to get out of here now. And
well, he doesn't know quite what happened.
No. Well, yeah, I mean, he kind of seems like something's off.
He's like, what did you do?
He saw the blood and everything.
I mean, he knows something's off.
Exactly. He knows something off, because he doesn't find out until the bell's tolled later on.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't even at that point really know.
Right.
What was all right. Like, what happened.
But then he realizes he better ship himself away. So yes. Both Tyrion and Varys are shipping away, escaping from King's Landing in this.
Well, I think that harkens back to, you know, when...
The sorcerer they in the crate?
They toll the bells. Oh. Yes, exactly. I was thinking that, too. But they toll the bells when there's a certain bell tolling for certain deaths. So when the hand of the king dies, it's like, toll the bell this way or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So I believe he did know that Tywin was dead. And like you were saying earlier, that Tywin is the pillar. Right there. Varys goes, the pillar just fell. This place is fucked.
Yeah.
He's like, I ain't staying there. Like, that place is just going to fall apart. They're going to eat themselves.
I feel like they just shipped off the brains. Like, yep. As that boat left, I was like, and there goes the brains.
So, like, there's what was keeping this place together.
So, where are they going? We know that Varys is originally from Braavos and Arya is going there. So, is it safe to say that maybe they're going to cross paths? Sarah says yes.
Yeah.
Interesting. But
everyone's going that way.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. I think that might be true. But doesn't Varys has a friend over there, right? That he was earlier in the seasons, like the dude he was sneaking around in the basements with and whatnot.
Oh, yes.
Illyrio.
And he also has all his Illyrio spies from? Like gotten him.
Yeah.
Doesn't he know a couple people in Volantis as well? I feel like I'm wrong. Never mind, I take it back.
There we go.
He has a lot of spies. He could have friends everywhere.
Yeah, he has friends.
He's gonna everywhere. Cover it with that.
Yeah.
Man of many friends. That's all you need in this world. Many friends.
Or many faces.
Many, many, many friends.
Many faces. Or a thousand eyes. And one.
Or one.
Basically, a thousand faces and a thousand eyes.
Or one friend with a thousand faces.
Wow. Or one friend with a thousand eyes?
That works too.
It's just a numbers game.
So with that, these four hosts wrap up this
predictions
season and talk about predictions. And talk about predictions.
Predictions.
Now, you're after Buzz TV. Predictions.
Stannis is coming.
The Red Woman loves Jon.
Yes.
Maybe in a bad way.
I honestly think that Stannis is going to take over King's Landing, because who is left to do it right now?
I feel like we're just not going to see King's Landing for a while. Except for the, like, Tyrells, who I'm like, oh, where were you? Like,
that's a good point.
Like, but, what, do I really want to go see Cersei's happy family and her madness? Like, what power do they have at the moment?
Right. I mean, Stannis is...
They have no money.
Yeah.
They are now going to be, like, this ridiculed family of lovers.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, what's Cersei's going to take control, and
that's not going to work.
Chaos is
the new Winterfell. Like, we know Winterfell's there. We know that maybe they'll go back, but we don't focus on it.
I just feel like as soon as everyone finds out that of Tywin's death, they'll know that King's Landing is like free for the taking, and I feel like that's going to be, you know, where everyone's headed.
Although it's worth noting that Tywin is just the Hand. I mean, Cersei's the Queen Regent. And
absolutely.
But he was also the King. He was also the Puppet Master.
No, he was. He was the Puppet Master.
Yeah. But we got the Tyrells there, too. And they're not a force to be taken lightly.
That's true. I feel like it's very easy for them to take over now, considering Margaery is trying to be with Tommen or whatever. And, you know, they're going to need the money. So that marriage is probably going to happen. But they don't really have an army anymore, do they? Will they? They won't have a commander, so I feel like Stannis is definitely going to be an enemy to be reckoned with.
And we have the Ironborn.
Yeah, the Ironborn is still running amok.
Yep.
Okay.
And we got Ramsay Snow still wrecking havoc.
Yara running around.
And we've got
Ramsay Bolton.
And we've got everyone in Dorne.
Where's Gendry?
Yeah, I don't know. We really haven't seen him at
all.
He just
took the boat off.
Gendry could now be reaching King's Landing.
But, okay, I have a question. Is Stannis the rightful king, or would Gendry be? Because Gendry was his son.
But Gendry wasn't of noble birth. He has the king's blood, mm-hmm. but his mom was just some whore.
So he can't be king.
So he has nothing?
I mean, he wasn't...
Now you're going to get shot with the crossbow bolt.
Well, he could be if he was legitimized, like Ramsay Snow was legitimized to Ramsay Bolton. Mm-hmm. So now he's able to inherit the Dreadfort from Roose Bolton. If mm-hmm. Gendry had been legitimized, but his father is now dead, so I don't know, it would take a king, I think, to legitimize? Can a king...
Or he can just, like, you know, take over the throne by brute force, like his father did.
He's got that hammer.
And then people will be like, oh, wait, and you're his son on top of it? Here you go.
So is Stannis the younger brother of Robert?
No. Well, he's the older brother, and Renly was the younger brother, but Robert was the one who took over by force. With a hammer.
Yeah, so Stannis is the older brother.
Wait, Stannis is older than Robert?
I thought so.
I believe so.
That just doesn't make sense.
Well, regardless, he's at least older than Renly.
No, because...
He's older than Renly,
right, that really matters is he's older than Renly. Yes. That's what actually matters.
And he's the only surviving brother there.
Okay, Lannisters will fall, and Daenerys has chained her dragon, so she's in a bad spot, and she's got no Jorah. Jorah could be he could find Gendry and it'd be like the Brienne Podrick combo.
Maybe he can train the dragons.
So we have Ryan Whittleson on the chat saying I'd be fleeing King's Landing too as soon as those bells sounded.
What if Jorah comes flying in on Drogo, black dragon?
Drogon.
Jorah's like, I figured out how to tame a dragon.
What if Bran takes over the mind of Drogon?
I'm fine with that.
That'd be a way to fly.
I'm excited for Arya to get to Braavos, and
it's a really good plan.
I hope that Arya runs into Jaqen H'ghar again because I miss him and the Band of Misfits.
Yeah,
I'm
excited to see where storyline is.
I don't even know where the Band
of
Misfits
is. Oh, the Brotherhood Without Banners?
Yeah, where did
is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I don't know where they all went.
That's a good question.
They can take over King's Landing.
Yes.
Yeah,
I'm coming
really
up with really great theories. By the way you laugh.
Everything's
at me.
Like, they're going to take over King's Landing. They're going to take over King's Landing. But yeah, we didn't see the Brotherhood Without Banners really either in the end here. But yeah.
We've got a long list of missing people.
Like, yeah. And the Hound, I think we're both predicting he's still alive.
Yeah.
And the Mountain will be Frankenstein. Will be known as.
No, I think it's
Frankenstein.
Gregor Stein.
That's good.
Is what it is.
I think that's about it.
So this was a hectic, crazy episode, though. So many things happened from every storyline that was just constant chaos. And I really think that this was a more exciting episode than episode 9.
I agree. This episode was fantastic. Yeah. I must say that, like, I said this to you guys right before we started, like, I leave so many finales being like, no, why? It was a really good episode, and I feel happy.
Yeah, I'm at
like,
peace.
It's amazing.
Because the good guys didn't really die.
Feel like this. Yeah.
I mean, a bunch of people died, but they weren't really good guys.
Yeah. Right.
So
it wasn't like the wiping out of the Starks.
Yeah. Even the Hound, who a lot of us like, not really a good guy.
Nah.
Yeah. I don't know, but I'm like, yay, good episode, and I'm happy.
Yeah.
It's
weird. Episode 9 and this one, they're kind of like one episode. You can't really watch one without the other. They're they're not standalone episodes. It's as if they were both the finale.
That's a it's an epic two-season arc in these episodes. And also a lot of CG use in this episode, too, with the skeletons. And
the tree.
The tree. The dire wolf is back. We have Summer attacking. So, lots of effects in this one as well. Mm. But, guys, that wraps up this season of Game of Thrones, and what an incredible one it was. I was really looking forward to this season all year, and now we have to wait a little more.
It's okay. That means we have time to rewatch, and then rewatch again.
Yeah. The wait is nothing on the book reader's wait.
But there's so many things that I was like, after the Red Wedding, I was like, guys,
with the book.
Like, after the Red Wedding last year, I was just, like, as a book person, I was like, please just stick with the show. You got Joffrey, you got Tywin, please.
Yeah.
But guys, once again, I'm Dave Klein. You can find me on Twitter at TheDaveKlein. That's KLEIN.
Hi, guys. I'm Sarah Stratton. You can find me here on other AfterBuzz TV shows and also on Anatomy of a Movie.
I'm Kristen Snyder. You can follow me at Cinematic Escape on Twitter. You can check out my blog, Cinematic Escape.
And I'm Kyle Maddock. You can find me at Mad Canard, like the duck.
Yes.
Or at a podcast of Ice and Fire.
And we will see you guys next year.
Bye.
Later.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network.
to watch or listen to other After shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.